Australian True Crime. The live show is coming.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This is a true crime podcast, as the title suggests, so please consider this your warning that it's not suitable for children, and it probably will contain content that may be triggering to some people. Also, it's an Australian true crime podcast, so Australian Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners should be aware it may contain the voices of deceased people.
The producers of this podcast recognise the traditional owners of the land on which it's recorded. They pay respect to the Aboriginal elders past, present and those emerging.
And about 4 months after that is when I started getting these strange text messages, and then for the following 2 years she never contacted Adam again. It was just all solely me. And that is where I started to become, I guess, a bit nervous, because it has now become a stranger just trying to cause me all this damage.
Netflix has recently added a number of documentary series that dive deep into the subject of stalking from the perspectives of both victims and offenders. Whenever I see or read anything about stalking, I fire off a text to Brisbane journalist Nicole Madigan to ask her if she's seen it and what she thinks about it, because Nicole was stalked herself and wrote a very thought-provoking book about it called Obsession. Nicole's story isn't the one we've grown used to. She was stalked for several years by a woman whom she'd never met, and she joins us on Australian True Crime to talk about her story and the parallels she sees in the stories of others.
I guess it did what I wanted it to do, which is get people talking about something that I don't think anyone was talking about with any level of seriousness, because it's one of those things that there's such a grey area surrounding it, and so much trivial talk about stalking, particularly online stalking, that it's rarely discussed in a really serious manner. I guess in my case too, having not talked about it with anyone for so long, and also I think having two females involved, which takes away another level of seriousness to society, I think. I was a little bit nervous about how it might be received, but I've got to say it's been really, really positive. Like, from the media coverage to the response I've got from people. And I guess the most surprising thing or the best thing for me is the sheer number of people who have contacted me to kind of say, thanks for talking about it, because I've been going through it and I just feel too silly to talk about it, but now I feel like I can.
That's what I was wondering, how many people had come out to say, yes, they can relate to it in a real sense. And also what you were just saying about how it's trivialised. In the series I Am a Stalker, in the very first episode of that, there's a man in prison for stalking, and he's talking about how it's trivialised in prison, how other guys are like, you know, it's that joke people make about what are you in for? And when he says stalking, people are like, oh, like they put you in jail for that? That's not even a thing. And even he's taking on board it's a thing, and he feels really bad about it. And I'm not trivialising what he's there for either, or making excuses for him, but he's trying to do some work on himself and he's trying to figure out why he has reacted the way he has to things in life, including his stalking behaviour. But he says that. He says no one in jail takes it seriously.
Yeah, exactly, because it's, again, I think it's just one of those things that when you see it represented on TV or talked about, it's either A, sensationalised to the point of, you know, almost being comical, or it's very sinister and there's killers involved and they're strangers, which in reality it's usually not a stranger that it's happening to.
So you did have people come forward and say to you, it's happening to me, or it has happened to me.
Lots and lots of people. I was surprised just how many people. And I guess the recurring theme was, A lot of people don't even know that it's illegal and they don't know what to do. And B, I think, well, the more common thing I think is they just feel so silly talking about it and how much it's impacting them that they don't say anything. And then I guess that has two negative impacts. One, it leaves them in this kind of state of isolation, and it also just further empowers the person who's engaging in that behaviour because they can just keep going.
Absolutely. We've spoken about this before. There's this phenomenon with sometimes people who are victims of family or domestic violence where they don't realise that they are in that situation, which sounds crazy, but it's a real thing where they go, oh, I just thought that we were going through a bad patch, or I thought that, you know, he was just angry this one time, or, you know, whatever it is. I didn't realise that this is what domestic violence is, being choked when we argue. I didn't know that's domestic violence, for example. People, you know, will say these things. And do you think that it's similar with stalking? Are people thinking, oh, I didn't realise I was being stalked. I didn't realise this is what stalking is.
Yeah, I think it is. And I think there's a lot of parallels between stalking and coercive control, sort of these non-physical forms of abuse, because when they're happening, in both cases, they're often a series of behaviours that are, in many cases, legal behaviours that sort of, when they're done on repeat, is what creates the problem. So, you know, in and of itself, in coercive control, if somebody, your partner, says something nasty to you or has an outburst or tries to say you can't go out this weekend, on its own, it's nothing really in and of itself. But once it's happening ongoing and it snowballs and that sense of control and fear takes over, that's when it becomes a problem. And I think stalking is the same thing. You know, often it can be behaviours that are quite innocuous and very legal, but once they're put on top of each other and snowball into a big ongoing prolonged campaign of fear, that's when it becomes a problem.
And that's what made me uncomfortable about your book, and I said this to you at the time, was I said, I feel like I have been guilty of some of these behaviours, and I needed time to process your book. And I said that to you. I was like, oh, man, this book's given me so much to think about. And that's why I wasn't ready to talk to you about it on the show for a really long time. And I said to you, okay, the stats were huge that you were writing about, that so many people have been stalked. And then I was saying, well, then, okay, then a lot of us are stalking then, because it's not the same three people who are stalking everybody. So I feel like if we're honest with ourselves, a lot of us are committing this behaviour. A lot of us are stalking each other and committing this inappropriate behaviour. And in your book, you talked about something that happened very early on in your situation where you started seeing a man. Basically, this is, if I can paraphrase, but correct me if I'm wrong at any point. You started seeing a man, and a lady who he had been seeing previously She is who became your stalker long term. There was a moment where you uploaded a photo to your social media and you're wearing a shirt of his. And then there was a message that came through where she said, I was wearing that shirt however many months ago. That became part of the larger campaign. But for example, that moment I felt from her perspective, I thought, gosh, yeah, that's painful. That's painful. When you've been seeing a guy and obviously you're more into him than he is into you, and then the next thing you know, he's seeing another woman and there she is wearing the shirt that you used to wear around his house. I get that that's painful and I got that she lashed out. It's not good. I don't condone it. It's terrible. It's embarrassing. It's inappropriate. It's horrible. But I blushed when I read that because I thought, I've done things like that in my life.
Yeah. And I think we all have to a degree. I mean, I think it is very hard when you can't get your head around something and something's painful and traumatic and everything like that. In this particular case, from my perspective, I guess we all look at it from our own perspective. So on that particular day, stalking didn't enter my mind or any such thing.
No. And I want to make it clear, I don't think you deserved that at all for any reason at all.
Of course. And that's why probably I didn't particularly do anything about it on that day. From my perspective, I was 37, dating for the first time since I was 18. I'd gone through a really unpleasant and ugly separation. So I was just sort of, I was shocked more than anything because I guess, yeah, you know, it wasn't as simple as just, oh my God, you're wearing the shirt I was wearing. It was a lot more explicit and vulgar than that. There's about four or five messages and they made me blush too, but in a very unpleasant way. They were quite confronting. Yes. And
that's all right. Now that you're reminding me, it was very much to let you know, in case you didn't know, that he was sleeping with this woman.
Yeah, yeah. Like enjoying, you know, that's the bed we've fucked in 100 times.
And, that's
and
right.
A
yes,
series
yes.
Of examples of the ways they may have done that. So I was just in shock, I guess. Like, wow, like I haven't encountered anything like this because I'm new to the dating scene, and I was sort of like, oh, is this what I'm about to walk into, kind of thing.
And I haven't sent messages like that. I want to make it clear, but
I assumed they might not have been quite as explicit, but I do understand that you can have that kind of shock reaction.
And I had to say, and I said to you, oh, you know, did it ever occur to you that maybe this guy who is now your husband? So I was like, oh, I don't want to say your husband might have been, dishonest with you back at the beginning of your relationship, but is there any chance there was a little crossover before he realised that he really did want to be with you? Or is there any chance that he had been a bit of a cad where this other lady was involved? And again, not that it excuses her behaviour, but for me it's just about, like, again, feeling like that early behaviour felt like the dumb stuff that people do. That made me feel awkward, like, are we all capable, I guess is what I'm asking you. That made me feel like, oh God, this feels like such a slippery slope.
Yeah, and I think that's the key point, the slippery slope and how it evolves over time. Because, look, in those initial stages, yes, I mean, look, I work and write about domestic violence and women's rights and things like that prolifically. So yes, I'm no fan of the man talking about their crazy exes or anything like that. Like, to me, that's a big red flag. I've got to say that when we had talked about people in the past, he had never referred to anyone as anyone crazy or anything like that until this day. But that being said, you're right. I had no way of knowing how he's treated her. I wasn't there. So, you know, I'm not naive. Anything could have happened. And that's why I just chose to ignore it, basically. You know, I was a bit emotional that night, but that was more because of everything else I was going through in my life, I suppose. You know, I didn't want something to come and spoil it on what now kind of thing. Like, is there something other drama I'm going to have to deal with? You know, I just thought I'd sorted my life out.
Yeah, because you were already taking a big chance to go into a relationship, weren't you, at that time in your life?
Just, it had just turned that corner and we, you know, with the kids involved, and I just thought, oh no. But we had a big conversation about it. Chose to ignore it, and I guess it was the very fact that this just continued and escalated for several years in a way that was more than just messages. It was in ways that seemed to indicate to me that she was quite determined to create actual damage. You know, she was actually starting to interfere with my life. And to me, she was essentially a stranger, even though I can relate to heartbreak and almost fixating on things. As you say, I think we are all capable of doing that. But it was becoming really genuinely scary for me.
Yeah, because it went on for years and it was definitely targeted at you, wasn't it, as opposed to the man in the middle.
Exactly. So it was very interesting because for the first 6 months of this, she would regularly message me and Adam in different ways, and they both ranged from, you know, raging anger or lies, and some of the ones to him were more almost comparing herself to me and things like that. So it did reek of, okay, this person's just not coming to terms, she's just trying to break us up. It's a simple thing like that that seems like it should be on a movie to me. I'm not used to this kind of thing, but that seems to be what's happening. So we got some advice. A friend of Adam's was a police officer, and he said, look, you know, sometimes with this sort of thing, if you make it an official complaint, it can just make things worse. You know, people get angrier and more things happen. So he suggested that we write her an email, if we had her email address, which we did, and just sort of effectively warn her that if it continues, we'll go down a legal path. So Adam wrote that email and we sent that. And then there was no reply, and a solid 4 months went by where we didn't hear anything. So we just thought, oh, perfect. That was just, you know, it had got out of control. She's probably just like going, oh, well, you know, this has got silly, I'll stop. And about 4 months after that is when I started getting these strange text messages. And then for the following 2 years, she never contacted Adam again. It was just all solely me. And that is where I started to become, I guess, a bit nervous, because it has now become a stranger just trying to cause me all this damage. And it was becoming something that I was becoming obsessed with as well, because it was just always on my mind.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's becoming a real mental health issue for you. And also there's the words, moving into your neighbourhood and making sure that you were aware that she had moved into your neighbourhood, wasn't there? There were social media posts and things like that.
Yeah, so as things escalated, it started to become a lot more personal. I will never know whether she actually moved into my suburb, but she certainly suggested that she had and would constantly tag the area. She had identified where we lived and posted that, and places that we'd been and were going to be with our wedding. So it was starting to become a bit more personal.
And also just letting you know that she knew. So she was investing some real time and effort and energy into investigating your lives.
Yeah, and I think that's the bit that's kind of so disconcerting, that someone is willing to put in this much time for so long. And you don't actually know what the end goal is, because after that amount of time, I didn't really think it was to break up the relationship anymore. It just seemed to be to somehow cause me some sort of damage in some way.
I wonder, and from everything you've learned from researching the book, because there's a lot of research in the book, and no doubt people have been seeking you out ever since to tell you things they know and things they've learned. What do you think? Is there an end goal, or does it just become habitual? Does it just become an obsession that people can't shake? What do you think happens?
Look, I don't know, but from the research I've done and I've spoken to the experts, it does seem to be something that, like, the way they put it is the more time a stalker puts into the campaign, the more invested they become. So the more time they're putting in and they're not getting that whatever it is that they're trying to get, they're wanting to put in more time to, like, get that mysterious outcome. And I guess the experts I spoke to also said that often they're not viewing it as a long-term campaign. It's just lots of little actions that they're taking whenever it pops into their mind. The other thing is, you know, there's different types of stalkers. They put this particular person into the resentful category, even though I guess in some way there is that rejection, but she wasn't sort of focused on Adam. It's not like she was focused on, you know, calling his friends and family or his workplace. It was all me. So that's how they put it. So the idea is, I feel pissed off. You've made me pissed off, and now I want revenge, essentially.
Pissed off that he chose you and not her?
Well, that sounds simplistic to say, but I guess, I don't know.
It's also, I think you're a humble person and it's maybe hard for you to say.
I guess the whole thing is hard to talk about. I think it feels silly. I mean, silly is a silly word, but it feels silly.
No, I hear
silly.
What you say. I mean, do you feel like that? Do you feel sometimes like I'm not Taylor Swift, but I've got a stalker?
Well, yes, it's embarrassing. I mean, that's how, it's a simple word to use, but it is just embarrassing to talk about. Oh, my, especially in the early stages, oh, my new boyfriend's ex-girlfriend is stalking me. Like, it just sounds ridiculous and you just don't want to, you know, when you work in the media, I guess, and you are privy to some of the horrors that go on, it just sounds so trivial and ridiculous.
I think the opposite. I think when you say stalker to me, I take it very, very seriously because to me that's like all the potential that's wrapped up in that. I take that very seriously. But I think maybe other people who haven't spoken to people who've, you know, about the consequences of stalking maybe don't get it, but I get it.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I never even put that label on it, I've got to say. And, you know, maybe some of my own bias came in too because I'm not one of those, you know, I'm one of those people that gets really frustrated and angry when there's a domestic violence case and all these people pop up saying, oh, you know, like there's women that do it and that kind of pisses me off. And I didn't want to be one of those people. So it wasn't something I really wanted to kind of talk about. So I just tried to deal with it privately. And I guess it wasn't until the police officer, the one that finally helped, called it stalking and really validated, the first person ever to validate how I was feeling and what I was going through, which led me to do some research of my own and discover that it was quite common. It was at that point that I thought, you know, it's time to start talking about it because, you know, I also know that when you hear other people's stories, you just feel more normal.
If you'd like to talk to someone about abuse that's taken place in your life, no matter how long ago it happened, your GP is always a good place to start. If that's not going to work for you, you can contact 1-800-RESPECT on 1-800-737-732 or via their website 1800respect.org.au. Or you can call Lifeline's 24-hour phone counselling service on 13 11 14.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard. But thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
So interestingly, your partner at the time, your now husband, wrote the email saying, if you don't stop this, we're going to get legal. So it stopped for 4 months, but then when it restarted, it was very much targeted at you. And then it kept going, it kept escalating. And that advice about send an email, don't go to the cops, don't get legal, came from a police man. But eventually you found, was it a police woman?
Yeah, so I tried one more time to call police. So that was when I was getting text messages. So I was a bit naive here. I just assumed because of the, and I could be wrong about this, but because of the laws required to provide your identity when you get a SIM card, I thought that might make it easy for the police. So I sort of said, I can give you the name and I can give you a workplace. I can give you lots of information if you can just confirm whether this is where the text messages are coming from. But they sort of said, we don't have the resources to put into that. It was that sort of, you know, call us when someone's breaking into your house, basically.
I know what you mean. Yeah, you think, can't you get the tower pings or something? And they're like,
oh. Yeah, and I mean, they weren't, he wasn't rude, but it was kind of, I felt like I was wasting his time. And so I let it go. So, yeah, it was a long time after that before I tried police again. And I only did that because of the things you referenced before, sort of our address being public and relocating, and another person had reached out to me, another victim of hers who was related to her, had identified me, and I was just starting to get just a bit too nervous about it. So, yes, it was a police woman that ultimately contacted me, and she was incredibly helpful and supportive.
Which is a common story, not that she's a police woman necessarily, but that finding that one person in the police who will take the case on, take it personally, really advocate for you and take it on. And, of course, we know that a similar thing happened in the case of the Netflix documentary, Can I Tell You a Secret, where these young women were targeted by an online stalker. And it's just extraordinary the lengths that this young man went to, a young man called Matthew Hardy, who was living in a small community in the UK. But he was gathering information about these young women who lived all over the UK from their online personas, from their social media. And they thought they weren't posting particularly personal details, but he was just patient. He was meticulous. He was just pulling the tiniest bits of information together to paint really intricate pictures of them and their lives, wasn't he? Unbelievable. How did this affect the way you live your life and what you post online? And did it shock you what this woman was able to glean?
Yeah, so it's really interesting that you say that, because the two examples that I can think of, and I don't have any evidence that I've got this right, it was just all we could conclude, was that how she discovered when and where our wedding was, for example. Mm. I just couldn't figure it out. But, you know, it occurred to me that we had created this lame website that we found for free called The Knot as an easy way to invite everybody and keep everyone updated with information. So I went in and I Googled our names, couldn't see anything, and then I Googled our names and wedding, and sure enough, this website popped up, and its default was a public page, which I would never have thought to look at. It just didn't even occur to me, because it's not a social media site. It's just a free wedding website. So I'm assuming that that would be how she found that information. I don't know. And same with our address. We didn't know how she found that address, because it was fairly new. And obviously our friends and family knew, and we didn't believe anyone was in contact with her. But, I mean, you never know. That's true as well. And all we could put it down to was Adam's Strava account at the time. He was doing running at the time and starting and finishing on our street. And we sort of looked up her name on Strava, and she did have a blank account. So
what's Strava? Is that one of those?
It's like a running tracking app. So if you do your runs, you track your runs. I don't run, so I don't use it.
So it's things like that that you don't realise are public.
Yeah, yeah. So they were two errors on our part, but just completely, just without even thinking that they needed to be set to private.
And what reminded me that of what you were saying before reminded me of this documentary just in that moment, Can I Tell You a Secret, is that similarly these young women had tried to find help. They didn't know each other at all, and each of them had been trying to find help with this. Their stalking was of this level. When I'm telling people about that documentary, I don't know how you describe it to people, but I say to people, because he would then would open, similarly get SIM cards, but he would take on their personas. And like at one stage he was, to one young woman, he was sending texts to her friend's father as her, but flirting with him, like flirting with her best friend's father as her. Can you imagine? He was just creating chaos like that in their lives, sending messages to their workmates, sending nudes of them to their workmates and friends, and just craziness. But they finally found one policeman who took it on, took it personally, and advocated for them. And he's the one who found this offender who'd done it before, and they got a great outcome, and I won't spoil it for anyone who hasn't seen it before. But you also, similarly, you just mentioned, found that there was another victim of this person. How did that feel?
Really strange, because when I got that message request, and it was just another female name, and I straight away, my just heart sank again, because I was just so used to getting so many different message requests from, you know, she'd sometimes use her own name and other times use other names.
Oh, so she'd start fake accounts and
sometimes okay. She'd make them in her own name, usually in her own name. Sometimes they were in other names. Once it was in my name, so it was all over the place. Yeah, and this person had said that they were a relative and had seen these posts and did her own detective work, I guess, and figured out who I was.
Oh, because your offender would post about you too. Is that correct? Post publicly on her social media about you.
Yeah, on her Instagram. And it didn't always have my name. It started off what she was tagging me and things like that, and then she'd develop all these lovely nicknames for me, which then followed through with all the horrible, horrific memes that she would create that would be to represent me, basically. So, and they varied, you know, it was either really ugly, horrible things to say, this is what I look like, or to talk about sometimes more kind of explicit sex stuff from the past, or just generally attack my work or kids or whatever else she felt like. But it was usually my appearance on Instagram, because it's such a visual medium, I guess. Yeah, this person had identified me from that, which was scary enough in itself, because I kind of lived in fear of being identified. That's why I didn't really tell many people her name or anything, because I didn't want people to see it, because they were just so humiliating.
I think her friends, though, would say to her at some point, mate.
Well, that's what you would think. Apparently it was a mutual friend who ended up had alerted this other person something weird's going on with this page, and she'd gone and looked at it and contacted me, I guess, just to reach out and say, hey, I went through this 10 years ago and I know how scary it is. So, you know, just reaching out for support, I guess. And that was just huge for me, because I finally was able to just offload how I was feeling, because I hadn't really done that. Yeah, just because, again, the intensity of how I was feeling and the anger, I was just grappling to come to terms with. So it's kind of mixed feelings, because it's like, oh, thank God it's not just me, but also, ooh.
But I'm sorry to you that it's happened to you. And so where did it end for her, for the previous victim?
She just ceased as much contact as she could possibly do, shut down all of her social media, and just tried to do it that way. But she does believe that she had lost her job because of this person, and her wedding was meddled with, like she cancelled it and sent invitations to the wrong people, you know, all of that kind of thing. And she said to me that she lived in fear, like all those years later, and she was even nervous kind of reaching out to me.
Wow. So where did it get to with you? Out of this policewoman you found who took the case on, you escalated it, didn't you? Or the police lady did?
Yeah, that's right. So initially I put in a cybercrime report, because I wasn't getting anywhere from calling police. And I just think I can articulate myself better writing it down. So I just wrote pages of tried to get everything down. It's quite hard to explain something that's gone on for so long, and there's so many kind of silly sounding things in it to make it sound serious, I guess. Anyway, that got referred to my local police station, and she called me and then basically said, the key here is going to be evidence. Do you have any? And I had plenty of it. I'd kept everything right from the very first message I got. And she had said, which surprised me, but she said that's quite unusual, and people tend to just, when they get horrible things, they delete it because they just don't want to see it.
I'm like that. I don't want to look at it.
Yeah, you don't want to be reminded of it. So I had all of that. So that was really helpful. It wasn't always easy. There were some uncomfortable bits. For example, you know, I think I mentioned to you that, you know, she'd developed these nicknames for me, like Ratface and Gonzo and things like that. But I had to go through everything to try to piece it all together so that I could demonstrate and prove that this nickname meant me, sort of thing. So it was a confronting process, but it made all the difference.
Wow. And so what happened?
So she went and spoke to her.
So she got a knock at the door.
Yeah, she got a knock at the door and avoided it for a really long time. So she didn't call back police for several weeks and had a lot of messages left and the card left in the door and things like that. So I had to wait a really long time. But anyway, they eventually had their meeting and she said I'd taken everything out of context and I just thought, oh, this is not going to go anywhere. But surprisingly to me, she said, no, don't worry, we're still looking into it. And then they contacted, by request, they contacted this other person that had reached out to me and I will always be thankful for this, but she wrote an official statement about what she had seen and handed that to the police and that kind of sealed the deal for the officer because she had an independent witness to prove what she was trying to do. So then I got this email to say that she'd been charged with unlawful stalking and I nearly fell over.
Yeah, I bet. How common is that? How common is it for charges to be laid over stalking, cyber stalking? You had no evidence that she had stalked your premises, broken into your house or anything like that. So how common is an outcome like this?
It's not very common and that's primarily for two reasons. One, or several reasons, to be honest. There's many, many cases of stalking that are reported, but nowhere near as many that happen. It usually takes about 100 incidents before someone will even report it to police. But then it's proving it that's the issue because stalking is the pattern. So if you haven't got the know-how or the evidence to express that and the police don't have the foresight to say, okay, let's sit down and this is what you need to do, which doesn't often happen, it's just not going to go anywhere. I was very fortunate in that regard.
Yeah, you got a good one. So what happens then? So this person is charged. They go to court. Did you have to face them in court?
So I didn't have to because it's essentially the police charging her and then she decides whether she pleads guilty or not. And she adjourned many, many appearances. This dragged on for a really long time. It just kept getting adjourned and adjourned and adjourned and adjourned. And then the police officer contacted me and said she's put in a lengthy plea, which indicates that she's probably going to plead guilty and try for leniency. So that's what she said she thinks was going to happen. So I made a decision to go to court. And the reason I did that was because I guess this person I felt had controlled me and my mind for so long. And I hadn't seen her in person ever. It was just this menacing person on the internet.
Yes.
Who had basically mocked and taunted me for so long. Almost, it felt like I was being laughed at all the time. You're just putting up with this and I'm going to keep doing it. So I just felt like I wanted to go. And in the end, I was quite glad that I did because the process itself with the prosecutors and everything was just a dog's breakfast. The prosecutor, for all the work that police officer had put in, the prosecutor had maybe an eighth of the information. He was completely confused. He couldn't answer some of the questions. And the judge, who was incredible, I was very lucky. It was her too, knew that I was sitting in there and she addressed me and asked if she could clarify some things with me, which was terrifying.
Oh, my God.
I shook. My voice was shaking, but I was able to answer those questions that the prosecutor could not answer. Yeah, so I think that helped a lot.
That is incredible. Incredibly lucky that you were there and incredibly frustrating to hear that the prosecutor wasn't ready. So, again, it feels like it wasn't being taken seriously. Did you get a conviction?
So, yeah, so she pleaded guilty. That was that. And they tried to argue for a fine and that was it. But the judge kind of talked them down. She was quite annoyed about that request, which I was quite surprised because I've got to say I was sitting there all day and I saw about five or six violent domestic violence offenders go through and none of those people got jail time and they all got probation orders and extreme leniency that horrified me. So I was expecting nothing by the time this came around. But for some reason, the judge said to me that my victim impact statement made a difference in the way she made her decision. So when they asked for the fine, she said no way and suggested the two-year probation order. And then she also recommended a two-year restraining order, which the prosecutor did not ask for, but the judge recommended. So,
and that's what happened.
Yeah. So she got the two-year probation order and a two-year restraining order.
When was that, by the way?
So that just finished in January, end of January.
So the other thing that worried me about your book, and I spoke to you about this, was because of the tone of the book and for anyone who hasn't read it yet, you must read it because we've left out a lot. And there's a real momentum to the book. And it made me worried at the end that this, and it's terrible to think this way, but that this book would make your stalker mad and would inspire her to attack you again, to strike back against you. I was genuinely like, are you sure, Nicole? Are you sure you want to do this? Which is a terrible attitude to have.
No, but it's understandable though. That did occur to me. Like I did put in a lot of thought about that. So there are two aspects to this, I guess. One was I just felt like with the knowledge that I had and knowing the impact you could have on other people by sharing these stories just through my work with DV and things like that, I felt like it was the right thing to do. There's that. I wanted to let other people know that you don't actually have to put up with this. You can try to change it. Secondly, from my own personal perspective, my experience with her was that doing nothing had achieved nothing. It was escalating. And before I finally got action from the police, it was severely escalating to the point that I was starting to get real nervous and paranoid, like even looking around outside when I went outside. It was just starting to get ridiculous. And even when she got that charge, she did obviously tone it down and delete a lot of things, but it didn't stop entirely. There was a lot of things still going up that was suggesting to me that as soon as she could, she would start again.
Yeah, she was still posting things on her account, wasn't she, that were obviously aimed at you but that you couldn't ever prove were aimed at you.
But it just gave me that nervous feeling like, oh, she still wants to come after me, I guess. The shock of being charged hadn't had the impact that I thought it would on your average suburban mum, I guess. Like if, because as you say, sometimes you can snowball your behaviour out of control and something like that is enough to make you go, I've got to pull myself together kind of thing.
Yeah, this is out of control. This is crazy. I mean, am I really going to... I've got the police at my door over this lady. I don't know.
Yeah, because they had said on that day that she had no former criminal history or anything like that. So I just thought maybe this would be enough, but it didn't seem to be. So I just, in terms of, you know, my own personal safety, I thought that it definitely didn't feel like it could get any worse. And I thought possibly putting it out there and just speaking openly about it might be just what she needed to just retreat, because it's easy to be like this when you're completely anonymous and nobody knows about it. But maybe if you thought everybody might know and your workplace might know, and maybe you might just back off. So I guess I was kind of relying on that, that maybe the fact that it is quite public would discourage her.
Yeah, and you deserved it. You definitely deserved your time to stand up and tell your story. I definitely felt that. You know, I hated thinking maybe you shouldn't. I hated thinking that for you. Did it work the way you wanted it to? And did the conviction and the book stop everything?
For the most part, yes. So when the book came out, she did delete all of her social media accounts, which I was relieved to see, and it stayed that way for a really long time. A couple of months before the restraining order ended, someone did alert me to a new account that appeared to be engaged in some kind of a countdown to the end of that restraining order, which did start to make me a little bit anxious. But I'm pleased to say that it's been a month. And nothing has happened. So I'm hopeful that she will have moved on.
Gee, that countdown, though, that made me anxious, even though it's over. It's like, God, that abuse, that intimidation is so simple to orchestrate, but so powerful, isn't
it? Yeah, and the longevity, because it had been quiet and nothing for a year and a half, to see it pop back up kind of shocked me, because, like, that's a long time to still just be waiting for that day. But it's interesting that you make that point, because one thing I thought was really effective about that documentary that we spoke about, Can I Tell You a Secret, was the use of those menacing-sounding voices. So if you can imagine that same documentary with just a regular voice, and some of those messages are very nothing when you hear them. Hiya.
Yeah.
What are you doing today? Or can I tell you a secret? Mm. You know, I thought that was quite effective in articulating how something so simple can be quite scary.
The thing I liked about it too was that for certainly the entirety of the first episode, we didn't know if it was a man or a woman. And it reminded me that we don't know, you know, stalking isn't the sole world of men. What are the stats?
It's certainly more common for men. So it's like actual statistics put it at 90% men Okay. But the experts say reality is probably more like 80 or 75, just because of the fact that people report women less often and they're considered less dangerous and it's more trivialised. So there's less, and men are less likely to report something like stalking, you know, for those obvious, you know, masculinity type reasons.
I like the documentaries and your book for making us think about our own behaviour as well. We were talking about the slippery slope about, yeah, we all can get a bit crazy about a heartbreak and about feeling rejected and about feeling like someone's chosen someone else over us. And we've all done embarrassing things. And certainly social media makes it, has made it easier for us to do those things. But knowing when to pull up is really important. In this case, there is a prior victim, which suggests a problem, but also you've talked about in your book and the documentaries talk about situations where there can be a one-off. There can be a person who's never done this before.
Yeah, well, that's right. And the person that I interviewed in the book who was the obsessed person who was willing and, you know, I was grateful to talk about his experience with that snowballing obsession. That's what he had said had happened to him. He'd been just a regular person and he just changed when he had this breakup and he just snowballed into this insane behaviour that he had to address himself with therapy and things like that when his friends started to say, what are you doing kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, as I said earlier, you're a very humble person and you're very self-deprecating, but, you know, the strength that you've shown through this years-long situation is astounding to me, that all the threads you've managed to keep together, your career, your family, your relationship, which was new at the beginning of this, your mental health, I mean, it really is astounding. I congratulate you, Nicole. It's amazing. And watching you also cope with the book coming out, and it's been really nice to sort of keep in touch with you through the process. And you've been so kind to me and my kind of working through your book. I mean, I read obviously a lot of true crime books and I read a lot of true crime books from personal perspectives, but yours really required me to ask so much of myself, like really, really think about my own behavior and the behavior of girlfriends and like just the behavior that I encourage. All of that just really made me think about our breakup culture. Most of us don't go as far as your stalker, clearly, but I think there is an encouragement to go a little bit of the way.
I mean, even we joked about it at the very beginning when we got together. We had this little colloquial term, we said stalking got us talking, because really that's her sort of involvement, you know, messaging me out of the blue is what kind of got us talking in the first place. So, you know, we even thought it was a bit of a joke to start with until those really sinister messages started coming through. So no one's doing anything wrong, but it's just I didn't realise how impactful it could be and how many other people it's actually, you know, causing that same level of torment too.
I'm happy to say that it didn't affect your relationship. Your family, your blended family is still together and you've lived through it somehow. How are you guys? I mean, how did you survive this?
We are good, but I've got to say it wasn't always easy. Like it's very tricky because for a number of reasons. She also heavily interfered in the mediation process with my ex-husband, and the timing of that was and I guess this is what we always talk about, where you never know what someone else is going through. The timing of that was just incredibly bad for me. She just walked in like a lovely, chaotic gift at that time to just make things worse. So that was really frightening and really potentially damaging because I've got children as well. And so it wasn't just superficial stuff that I was worried about. It was really having an impact all around. And of course, you know, with me and Adam, I mean, you know, who wants to be talking about this kind of stuff? It's not only is it scary and horrible, it's very uncomfortable. And I, even after a while, when these posts were going up so often, I just stopped reporting them to anybody. Like I might mention it. There was a new one today, but I wasn't sort of sitting there going, have a look, like let's have a look at it and look at the meme that's been put up about me today or the things that were said about the past or anything like that. So it's, you know, it had its moments, but yeah, we've all come out the other side relatively, you know, unscathed. Yeah. But, you know, the that feeling of being kind of paranoid and on edge remains.
Thank you to our guest, Nicole Madigan. There's a link in our show notes to Nicole's website, nicolemadigan.com, where you can find links to her journalism and social media, and also buy your copy of her book, Obsession. If you need support after listening to this podcast, you can call Lifeline on 13 11 14 or contact 1-800-RESPECT on 1-800-737-732 or 1-800-RESPECT.org.au. Indigenous Australians can contact 13 Yarn on 13 92 76 or 13yarn.org.au. Thank you for downloading this episode.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Australian True Crime. The live show is coming.